Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
Hey everybody, this is Post Rolls. It is Bill and myself, Raleel, and we have the great fortune of being here with the writers of Mithras Destined. We have Mike and Brian with us to talk about Destined and how they are, you know, what went into that. We are quite aware that there are some other podcasts on this, so we're going to stay off of those topics, and we're going to ask some hopefully unique and distinct questions here. And so with that, I'm going to I'm going to just start with, first off, let's talk about what Destined is in the quick fashion, so that people might know what it is.
Destined is a superhero role-playing game based on the Mythos rule set. It's a standalone game, but it was actually inspired by a adventure that I had written called Agony and Ecstasy. It was actually something that Laws asked about, that he had been exploring the idea of doing a superhero-themed game for Mithras for a while. We just kind of had discussion on the message boards, actually, about it, and he liked some ideas, and it kind of threw a pitch in, and that became the adventure. And then it was, I think, 2018, am I thinking, Brian?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, that he had contacted me and got Brian and I together. We'd actually worked on Agony and Ecstasy as well, because Brian was editing that. And Brian had some ideas about superheroes in Mithras, and I had some ideas about superhero Mithras, so we put us together, and that's kind of where we're at now.
Cool. All right. So did you do Agony and Ecstasy up before the whole Laws was talking about superheroes? You were like, oh, I'm doing this thing and you might be interested in it?
No, actually. It was, I will say that Agony and Ecstasy themselves, the villains of the adventure, are villains that I had in a previous superhero campaign that I was running for my group. They were actually thugs for another villain. And I had actually put two pitches into him, and one was kind of more flamboyant, Silver Age superheroes, and he said it just didn't feel like it was the right story. So I had this other idea as well, and that actually became the adventure, and it was a little more gritty, it was a little more down to earth, there was, I think, a little more, hopefully, you know, human connections and motivations. I actually hadn't written it beforehand, it was actually written whole cloth
right for
the adventure.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because we, at TDM, we kind of kicked around the idea of producing a superhero game or, you know, some sort of supplement, and Mike just happened to come along with this really fantastic idea. So after kind of seeing the success of that, Laws decided that, you know, hey, a standalone game would be fantastic for Mithras, for superheroes. So enter the production and the writing, the 3-year writing of Destined.
I would say that was kind of a surprise to me too, because I think when we were discussing the idea of it, if it would ever happen, I always assumed it was going to be something like After the Vampire Wars or, you know, Worlds United. I thought it was going to be something where it was just going to be a separate book with powers and such like that. So the standalone game was kind of a shock, actually, whenever he proposed it.
I suppose that the timing was pretty good. I mean, we of course have the whole Marvel Universe business that has taken the world by storm, and the DC Universe stuff, which has taken the world less stormy, I suppose. But then of course you guys ended up writing stuff coming out pretty much at the same time as The Boys was started hitting, and that sort of change from we're going to be very flashy superheroes that are always doing good to maybe not so good superheroes. Like, didn't Agony and Ecstasy like come up like at the same time as The Boys or something like that, or the same year?
I think it did.
Pretty
it came
close.
Out, if we're talking the show.
Yeah.
It did precede the show. I know the comic had been out for a while.
Yeah, the comic's out for a while.
Yeah, I'd never read the comic, actually. I have a complicated relationship with Garth Ennis. In terms of this. So, it was just one of those things that I think what you said in terms of Destined, it absolutely was influenced by the show. In fact, I can say very openly that the velocity damage rules were added specifically, and they were referred to, and I think they're referred to on the boards as this often as the A-Train rules from the infamous scene in the first episode and in the comics. That was pretty much, I think, what we were referring them to as well, if I remember it, Brian, because Laws had watched it, and I remember getting an email from him, and he said, "We need to add something in here to simulate that." Because, you know, Mithras in general, you know, with passions, and I think for a lot of the styles of plays, and if you really go through how people play it, you know, people play pretty deep games. You know, there's deep storytelling. And that goes to any RPG, but I feel like a lot of the Mithras, you know, people who love the game really love those kind of stories. And a lot of times because of the system itself, it's a grittier system. I think there was even some questions. I know we had talked about it, you know, Doug, as far as like, you know, when you were discussing the game, you know, whether it would work for supers, you know, because it is kind of a more unforgiving damage system in some ways. It's kind of you can pretty much be taken out with one good shot in most normal Mithras games. So, you know, it was, I think it did kind of fit that grittier tone, but I think some of the things we did in the book itself also shows that it can be used for any kind of superheroes. You know, I think you really can do that. I will say in games that we've played of Mutants and Masterminds, you know, which is a long-standing game, we've had heroes get taken out in one shot. I know we played some Necessary Evil for Savage Worlds, and I know Savage Worlds, you know, you get a good enough damage roll and you're done. You know, it's where it's not necessarily something where I think people don't always think of it that, but most super RPGs I've played, you know, they can be just as brutal as Mithras, you know, has the perception of being. And I will say that too, because I feel like people think Mithras is far more deadly than it actually is. You know, and I think we show that, you know, it does work for superheroes.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, I think that Mike is absolutely right. Like, Mithras kind of has this reputation as being extremely brutal and you know, short-lived life as a hero. But, you know, I think you could use Mithras really to emulate almost anything. High fantasy, you know, we've shown that with superheroes as well. I mean, it is really a very flexible system, absolutely.
Absolutely. So to kind of dovetail off of that, I one of the people on the boards or on Discord asked, like, why did you feel the need to constrain yourself to the power levels that you've got currently, right? Like, you like go up to the up to the Paragon level, and you kind of have some examples of that in the, you know, like, those are pretty much like the starting X-Men, maybe some of the 80s X-Men level of stuff. But like, so why did you feel constrained to the need to constrain yourself down to that level?
I think initially Laws wanted to stress test the system that Mike and I had developed, namely Mike's system in Mithras's majority of his kind of thought process going through it. So I think we wanted to sort of stress test it up to a certain level, and then in the future, if Destined is successful, so go out there and buy your book. If it is successful, then we would kind of push that limit a little bit more.
Right. So like, well, let's see if this flies before we see if it goes into orbit, sort of thing. That's
It's still quite powerful, isn't it? As it is. I mean, it's not your it immediately goes beyond kind of street level and above. It goes beyond Luther Arkwright, for instance, quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's the one of the big changes from Destined to other Mithras products is that, you know, it's the idea that you're always powered. You know, you're not spending magic points, power points, you know, you're not spending prana, you know, you're actually able to do your abilities all the time. And most cases, you know, aside from making an attack roll or something like that, you're not rolling to see if your power activates. You're not, you know, unless you take a limit to it, you can't fail. And I think even what Brian was saying, yeah, I think what Laws' guidelines were initially was we were aiming for something he had said, I think at one point, the Lou Ferrigno version of the Incredible Hulk
Right.
initially. And then we kind of realized, you know, that as we tried the power levels, you know, I think Paragon, you know, you can make a lot of heroes with Paragon, you know, and I think one of the things that's always challenging when you're doing a superhero game in general is how disparate and wildly different power levels are for superheroes, And even for individual characters, you know, I think I've talked about this on the boards a couple places too, is, you know, Spider-Man's a great example. You know, I always think of the classic TSR Marvel Superheroes game. And I remember very distinctly when I was a kid, and you can find the image if you look online, there's a picture like where they're talking about the strength tables and how much a superhero can lift. And they use Spider-Man as an example. And
I remember that very vividly. Yeah, like trying to lift a jet. I remember
yeah,
that.
he was able to lift a VW bus, and it looked like he was straining, but then, you know, there was an airliner there, and now Spider-Man's strength is, I mean, he could probably like heft the airliner over his head with no problem. And that's just changes in writers, changes in editors, changes in the stories. So, you know, I know there's been a discussion on a couple of the boards about emulating characters, and it's hard, you know, with any superhero RPG to really accurately do that. You know, it's that question of why doesn't Superman just punch through everybody? Because he should be able to. He's able to lift, I forget how many trillion tons or whatever it is now. It's a ridiculous amount. You know, I heard a great thing once. Someone said that the RPG that would be best for emulating Superman would be Fate, because you really don't have those kind of constraints,
Yeah.
you know, in terms of a narrative style system. So it's really tricky in this kind of system. But I do think, you know, if we do get the opportunity to explore that, we do want to talk about, you know, how do you make a Superman style character in Mithras? How do you make that kind of character where it's interesting to play, but you can also play them alongside a Batman? You know, you can play them alongside a lower powered hero. You know, Green Arrow can be on the same team as Superman, but they both have something to contribute. And I think that's a tricky balance. You know, I going back to, you know, I remember playing some other super RPGs where if you were the normal powered vigilante, you were basically there to be a distraction and a support character.
Right,
If you were Batman and Superman fighting Darkseid in a lot of super RPGs, Batman's just there to kind of distract Darkseid and keep him busy. But you don't feel like you're really contributing to the fight. You know, even in the playtest we did for Agony Xyzia, you know, the Mortician, who you mentioned, who is the, he's the Daredevil, he's the Batman, you know, he's the unpowered guy who's just a really good fighter, was actually the one to take out Agony, who is, you know, super powered and has armor and, you know, is very durable and regenerates and is real tough, but that character was able to still be effective and feel like he was contributing to that fight. And that was something I think in terms of the power levels we have works very well, but I think if we're exploring other power levels, we get that chance, that has to stay there. You know, there has to be a reason why you can have that team and you can have a
Yeah.
fight between two disparately powered characters, still feel like you're contributing.
I do have to say that I've been fairly impressed with the flexibility that we've seen it in. I mean, I played in Gen Con and last year, and we're starting up a game here shortly, and I was just going through and making up the end bad guys, which in this case are a trio of cybernetic mutant pigs because of reasons. And I made them exactly under the same rules that the heroes were doing. This is straight up street level. So this is going to be a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle style game. And so they are all mutant animals in some fashion. Well, the cybernetic pigs are also made under the same rules, and I looked at those and I'm like, these guys are very powerful. Like, you know, if I walked any of those into a stock Mithras game, they're, you know, that's going the GM is going to be looking at that and saying, what is going on here, right? They would be very, very concerned about that. And they're tough, right? They're very tough, very strong. And that's the lowest level in there. It just requires some good manipulation of the system to get it to do that work.
That is kind of what we're aiming for. You know, a street level hero is still tough. You know, they still can have some good powers. They can still, you know, do some amazing things. And, you know, they're based very much off of a standard Mithras level hero. You
Yeah.
know, if you look at the stats and the attributes and things, they're kind of that same range. And, you know, just like the regular game, you know, the core game, you know, I when we played Mithras, you know, they're still capable heroes. So, you know, those bumps in power level may not seem like a lot, but even just a couple more powers, a couple more things, your stats or just attributes are just a little more, you know, higher, characteristics are a little higher. It really makes a difference in the system. So, you know, it's amazing how well it scales.
Yeah. It is pretty impressive. Like I played with the epic level and on street level, and it's been quite good.
one of my tests that I did prior to the publication of the actual book is I had one player do a street level character and one player do a Paragon level, and playing those together and trying to, as a GM, sort of balance those out as far as, you know, the villains that they would encounter and the different, you know, skill sets that they each had and all of that. So, you know, again, it's a very, very flexible system. A lot of it depends on, you know, the understanding of the actual players themselves, just like any other game, the actual GM and how they manage all of that. But yeah, I mean, I didn't find any issue with having those extreme sort of levels on each side, two separate characters.
Mm.
So Mike, one time on the Discord, you mentioned how many of the games that we play and the media that we consume are functionally superheroes, right? Like, you know, one way or the other, they're superheroes. Have you explored using Destined as for some other genre other than the straight up superhero genre? Like, have you looked at it and said, let's use Destined to make a D&D party?
If you go through the book, I know there's a reference to it. We talk in one section about using it for other stories. Like, I think the example settings we have, there's a science fiction setting. There's kind of a, I would say probably kind of like a Pokemon inspired, you know, Digimon, all those kind of genre style settings about, you know, having little companions with you that have powers.
Yeah.
And there's one called Champions of New Arcana. That's an actual campaign I ran. It was essentially a high fantasy superhero campaign where it was had all the trappings of a fantasy campaign. It was set in kind of a medieval timeline, but I guess there were some technological advances that had happened that, you know, they'd used raw magic to kind of create, you know, essentially vehicles, you know, more interesting, like rapid fire crossbows and different things. But it still was a fantasy setting, and you know, the heroes got their powers from magic items. They were infused with raw, I think called aether, you know, raw magic. Some of them gain actual power. Some of them were just really, really powerful wizards. You know, and it was amazing. You know, that was kind of where that idea came from, and why I kind of said that is because it really is true. You know, we're playing a D&D campaign right now, and I think we've hit level 9, and we're badass. You know, we just took down an ancient black dragon at 9th level, which doesn't seem like it should happen, but it does, because you have all these powerful spells. We're dripping with magic items. You know, we have all these things that are giving us these advantages, and we are basically superheroes. You know, and it really applies to a lot of what we do. And I've always kind of thought that, you know, that a hero is, and just because he's wearing tights and a cape, or just because he's wearing plate mail and carrying a broadsword, you know, they're basically people who are greater than the normal average person, who are going out and facing dangerous threats and have abilities usually beyond that of a normal person. And you know, if you go through anime, if you go through a lot of our media, I would even argue John Wick. Look what that man does in those movies.
You know, oh, yeah.
He's able to do things that, you know, any of your action hero stuff, any of your Arnold Schwarzenegger movies from the 80s and 90s, any of that stuff, they're basically superheroes. You know, they're able to withstand more punishment. They're able to deal more punishment. They're you know, infallible when it comes to certain things they do. So I think it's just kind of our modern incarnation of heroes of legends. You know, you go back and you have your Beowulf, you've got your Hercules, you've got all these things from mythology. You know, they were heroes too. They were superheroes. That's kind of where some of the backstory comes from, Dest, is the idea that they were real superheroes at the time and something happened and changed them.
I think that notion of the characters functionally being superheroes is alluded to in many role playing systems, right? Like there's always this notion that you're somehow above the norm when it comes to games. And I think when people come into Mithras, they look at that stat block and they say, I don't know about this. I feel so weak. And I'm like, oh, yeah, but that's probably a normal person there, right? Like you're used to coming from a game that where you're functionally a superhero, right? Like level 1 wizard in D&D has substantially above the norm just by the fact that he can toss around magic missile even once a day back in, you know, 1E time frame. Like no, most people just can't do that, right? Like, or he can levitate, or whatever other first level spell comes out of it, you know, make a burning, you know, make them burning hands or what, whatever. I feel like it's alluded to, but never explicitly hit on the nose very well. It's sort of a narrative tack that they go with it, but never mechanically so quite as much.
I kind of view it in terms of Mithras that 98% of the population in your world is rabble.
Yeah. You know, yep. Yep.
They're not real tough. They don't have a lot of skills. They get through life every day. And then it's the exceptional people that you're following the stories of. You know, we're not following the story of, you know, the normal guy who works the normal job who has nothing really exciting happen to him. That's not why we play these games. I'm sure someone out there plays these games for that reason, but most people don't. We want to be heroes. We want to be the epic characters. We want to be the ones who legends are told about.
Mythic grocery store would be pretty interesting, I gotta say, but maybe not for everybody.
Mythic S Mart.
Mythic S Mart. That's right. Shop Smart. That's right.
Well, I mean, Call of Cthulhu does that a little bit. I mean, unless you get players who just want to stay at home, which I've had the experience of that happening. So, you know, it does say investigator at the top of your character sheet, but some people don't want to do that. So, okay, you're a librarian. Bye. But yeah,
then bring the adventure to them, right?
Yeah, but that's implicit in a kind of supers game. So,
isn't that even Dungeon Crawl Classics? I've never really played it, but I've your first adventure is essentially you just funnel the endless supply of zero level normal schmucks.
Yes.
Through an adventure until the ones who survive, you know, they're the ones who end up becoming the heroes.
That's right.
Yeah,
it's absolutely true.
It effectively, I've played a couple of those, and effectively, your little group of rabble are, you can treat them as hit points. Like, each player has, like, well, this is one way of playing it. As you lose people, they are effectively your hit points just dying off. You know, and they're represented by, you know, gong farmers or whatever that you. But yeah, that's absolutely the that's the paradigm. But then at the end, you become a first level hero. That's the structure of it. Yeah, you become the hero.
That is the character generation process, quite literally.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, you've done a random. I think in one of the interviews, you've talked about a random power acquisition phase, or I don't know who did that, but running a game where the PCs acquire their abilities through random generation. I don't know if you've ever done that in a game or.
We did in the playtest. My first, well, actually, that's not true. My second superhero RPG was Marvel Superheroes. My first was actually Superworld.
No, so you're a long time superhero fan then.
I'm right from the start. I have pretty much owned every superhero RPG you could probably think of at some point. It's just always been a genre that I really loved. But yeah, I mean, I always had that love of that because we would do that, you know, where we would just be bored one night and a couple, you know, percentile dice, you know, rolls, and you had a superhero. You know, they may have had the most bizarre power set possible, but you had one. And then the fun was kind of trying to figure out what to do with that. And as part of the process, you know, I sat down while Brian and I were working on a book, and I made a random superhero power table for Destined. And whenever we did the very first playtest adventure proper, like when we were actually doing a short playtest campaign to test out the mechanics with my group here at home, I had that available, and I said to them, I said, you can choose your powers. I said, or you can maybe roll once and see if it's a power you like. You could roll twice and pick the one you like. Like, they'd start off at street level, so I think it, like, gave them one or two powers to start. And they did. I think across the board, every single player said, no, I'm just going to roll. And they came up with some interesting results. They had a lot of fun. You know, the guy who had lucky, you know, really had a great time with that and really kind of helped develop the luck rules, you know, the way he played his character and the way we kind of did things. And, you know, somebody had blast, somebody had super strength, you know, it was just a nice mix of powers that just kind of came about randomly. And, you know, we did actually discuss that at one point, I think, Brian, about we discussed about putting that in as an appendix for the book, but just for space and just you know, at the time, just to make it in.
It may appear at some point in the future. We'll see.
I was gonna something related to that, which I was curious about. I don't know if you considered it. I'm not very familiar with it, but I know the I've seen the Mutants and Masterminds GM toolkit, where they had a system for making a character based on archetypes, basically, but it takes you all the way through the character creation system using, I mean, it has a series of tables, which I assume you can either choose or roll on. But was that ever considered as an option for character creation? That kind of style, that approach, if you know what I'm talking about.
The one I think of for that is, I always think of Traveler.
Yeah, sure.
Traveler is very much like that too. I don't know that we really discussed that specifically. I mean, I'm a fan of those, you know, because I think there's a lot of times, you know, even after all these years of gaming, you know, we start something and I really have to sit down and I'm totally blanking on a character concept. So that's why I'm a big advocate of that.
I have one guy in my group who absolutely swears by random characters. He loves it every time. He loves the chaos of it. And actually, for this TMNT game, I pulled out my old TMNT books and made everybody roll against the random animal table. And then it's like, this is your guide for what the character looks like. Go pick appropriate powers out of the book.
In our latest game, our latest superhero game, my daughter, who's now 7 years old, wanted to play as well. So she said, I want to play a hamster. I'm like, okay, so you want to play a human who dresses as a hamster? She's like, no, I want to play a hamster. So we sort of went that route as well, where she has certain powers which are appropriate for hamsters and certain ones which aren't. But, you know, again, the flexibility of the system worked great.
Yeah. Very nice, flexible way to go for that.
So on a side note, Brian, I just saw on Disney Channel they're having a superhero show about a little girl superhero and her hamsters.
Oh, no kidding.
Wow. Oh, the doom for you. I prepare your household to be invaded by that.
I mean, as far as what you're saying, Bill, I think it'd be something that would be interesting to explore. You know, I think to a degree, you know, you can do a lot of random generation. You know, you can randomly generate your stats. You can, you know, skills not so much, but you know, you can find a way to kind of randomize a lot of your background elements. We have the background event tables, you know, which kind of help. You know, I would recommend even for a lot of people if you don't know what you're doing, do that. You know, roll on a background event
table. Oh yeah. Oh yeah,
it's a great way just to kind of come up with a couple ideas in terms of a background story, and you can, usually for me, that's where things build from. You know, I'll get like an idea. I love online generators. There's a ton of tables out there. You know, it's just I'm a big fan of that just because of that, because it's hard sometimes to really come up with a good concept or idea. And I don't know for you guys, but for me, a lot of times my actual character doesn't gel until probably like 4 or 5 sessions into a campaign. You know, it's like, okay, I'm playing a bard, you know, and then I know what that means mechanically, but what does that mean in terms of who he is, how I'm going to play him, and, you know, that's why I like Mithras, too, for that, you know, you can use your passions to kind of guide your how to play your character. You can use your background events. There's lots of things and tools in there already to help you figure out some of the details and bits that make them interesting and memorable.
Yeah, I have pretty much the same sort of process they go through. I mean, I really like to like interact with the GM and say, hey, you know, what does the world really look like here, to make sure that it fits really well, because, well, frankly, most of the time I GM, and so that's kind of how I look at it. But if I'm coming in and they don't have like a really full world set up, it's a kind of a slow building process, and it takes several sessions to get in there, and eventually you'll find something that you're like, oh, hey, I want my character to hook into that, and then you can just say, I'm going to declare a passion here. And generally that'll fly pretty well, because the GM looks at it and says, oh, you want to interact with my world? Let's do that for sure. That'll be fun.
Well, and I will say, I think, Brian, if you could agree, I don't know if you agree with this too, the idea that was the part of the book I think was the hardest part of all the parts we were writing, was we had a background event table, and then Laws came in and said, you know what, we should have a background table for every origin too.
Yeah. I distinctly remember that. I think it was a positive change overall, and also Pete's recommendation about the changing of the association of powers with, you know, POW versus int and dexterity and all of these different things. So that was a fantastic idea that we incorporated as well. Required some, you know, large changes across the board, but I think it was for the benefit of the
group. It was worth it.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Like you made a change to not associated with int and dex, and pretty much everything is associated with con and pow, and there's some minor stuff that's associated with other things.
Yeah, initially, and correct me if I'm incorrect here, Mike, but we had the majority of powers all associated with pow, so power. Pete was going through the book, Pete being a fantastic sort of rules master of Mithras, and looking at it and saying, okay, this is a great idea, but I think we should have these associated with the different characteristics other than just power. And so that change took quite a bit of time, but it was definitely worth it, because I mean, having something associated with dexterity versus just power all the time means that that's not just a point where you dump all of your points, right? That character where you just dump all of your points. So now, you know, if you're rolling randomly for your characteristics, which is a, you know, one way to go, absolutely, you could come up with a character who wants to be Batman, but might actually be better as Superman. So,
oh no, I was saying, I think you're right. I think he was also the one who suggested linking the number of powers to the origins, which I think was good too, because I think initially it was just a straight power thing that we had in there initially, as far as how many powers you got. But it really kind of made the origins, you know, give them a little bit more mechanical involvement in terms of the game. But again, like Brian was saying, you know, that it was real easy to min-max in terms of how you get that. And there are players out there who absolutely will do that, where they want the most power, they want the most, you know, dynamic hero. But I think having it spread out among the different characteristics gives them all a little value. I mean, you still have to kind of, you know, if you're playing a psychic character, you still want to kind of push towards charisma. If you're playing, you know, a bulky, burly, you know, tough guy, you're going to do con and strength, you know, so there still are things that kind of logically make sense. But, you know, we also, I think at that point, I think we decided on to include the idea of, you know, that you don't have to even necessarily tie your number of powers and a lot of the other things to any specific characteristic. That's what we have the option, that if you just want to have all street level characters get two powers, all epic level characters get four. There's the optional system in there that you can completely take characteristics out of it for all the powers, and that there's, you know, you start at a base level and then you can actually spend boosts to increase your power level, you know, within each power. So you can even eliminate characteristics entirely if you want. So you can have characters that powers completely separate from that. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that all came from, I think, that discussion as far as what Pete was contributing to it and asking us to make some adjustments that I think it kind of gave it a little more depth and a little more options to really play the way you want to, you know, and tweak it the way you need to for your game.
So one thing I noticed when we were going through and doing up our characters, one of the guys is making a mutant snapping turtle, and we were kind of looking at the best way to align his points in there, and it turned out that change made it so that it was much less easy to just optimize the character in any one particular fashion. Right, it made sense for him to invest into con rather than to drop the stuff into size, because he got some additional benefit out of that because he has a close combat ability that, you know, it would increase in damage dice and effectively nullify the bonus that he would have gotten from his damage modifier. And I was like, that is a very subtle change that is quite, you know, makes a pretty big impact on the whole thing. It's like that, you know, it helps eliminate that, you know, that desire to min-max. Like, okay, we're just going to do this so that it looks good for the character, and it doesn't have to be quite as perfect as all that. It's very nice.
I even had a character who rolled all of his characteristics randomly, and we also used the random powers table. And so he ended up actually with a character who would have been, as I mentioned before, probably better as a flying Superman type character, but he wanted to play a Batman character. So he ended up being, I guess, a comedic character in a way, always trying to do these things like Batman, but he always ended up failing. But that was a fantastic game just because of the way that it ended up being sort of a comedic relief for the rest of the party. And he would succeed occasionally. So that was fun too.
So we honestly, we've covered way more of this document than I expected. So Bill, did you have any more questions that you wanted to throw in here? I mean, I've kind of been going through this and asking stuff, but...
Yeah, there was a couple actually. I don't know where I saw this, but I had a question about adventures, about what plans there are for that supplements. But B, I saw or heard somewhere about Destin being part of the Gateway license, and I just wondered, does this mean that the authors could independently publish a destined adventure as part of Gateway? Is that correct, or have I got that wrong?
As far as I understand it, the Gateway license is open to any portion of the Mithras universe, so to speak. If anybody has questions about that, I would definitely reach out to Laws. There's a submissions email, submissions@thedesignmechanism.com, where you can pitch an idea to Laws and us, the TDM team. And we will definitely review that.
Is there anything you can say about sort of supplement or adventure plans?
There are supplements in process. I can't go into detail on those, obviously. But there are several people who have pitched ideas around adventure supplements. I can't speak about much more than that, other than to say that, yes, there are things in process. We, the TDM team, are very, very busy with a lot of different cool stuff on the horizon right now.
That's fantastic. That's good to hear. I can tell you that I'm pretty excited to even run my game this Friday. My group has looked at this and they said, you know, this looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. My one player who actually tends to prefer rules light systems and tends to be a much more social player looked at Destiny and says, you know, that's actually the right level of crunch. That reminds me of when I was playing Champions back in college, but it's a lot lighter and much more suitable to my tastes now. And he's very, very excited for this. Was the first to have his character done, right? He's like, oh, I want to do this and this and this. And so he's very, very on board with it. And frankly, I am too, because it seems like a pretty good balance between the rules light stuff that is pretty common nowadays and then the super rules heavy stuff that we might have had, you know, a long time ago. It's somewhere in the middle of that.
People see some of the things in there and think that it's a very heavy, crunchy system, and it's not. You know, I that was actually my surprise when I first started playing it, was I kept looking at, especially the combat rules, kept thinking, oh, this is going to get down, this is going to take a while. And it's the fastest, smoothest combat that I think I've ever had. And I'm always a big advocate for the idea that, you know, most RPGs, unless you're contributing narratively, you know, instead of just swinging your sword, you know, I flourish my sword and I swing it over and I bring it down upon the goblin's head. You know, mostly it's, you know, okay, you do exploits damage. I love the fact that even the way combat's designed in Mithras, it tells a story. You know, each blow, each attack, each thing. And we found that even when we were playing through Destin, you know, that it just made the battles more dynamic. It made it like a panel off a comic book page. I think I said this before, but, you know, and I don't know if you had that moment too, Brian, where it just, you started to realize, like, you're writing it, and you think, you know, in your head it's going to work, but there's that always that nagging doubt of you that it's not going to do what I think it's going to do. And we were playing it, and we kept thinking, oh, wow, okay, this actually works. You know, this feels like a comic book. And that was kind of the hope, and I hope that we've, you know, that's everybody's experience with it too. People really enjoy it and really tell some great stories with it.
With that, I think we'll end this. Thanks everybody. That was our interview with the writers of Destin, with Mike Larimore and Brian Pivik. And that, you know, that's out there for Mithras now. You can get it from the TDM store and all of that. And frankly, for those of you who are concerned about the quality of the books, I have it, and it is the best of my Mithras books, I think I have to say, for book quality. So